mind. This should be done wholeheartedly with full conviction and faith to the Buddha. If you do not follow the karmic law of cause and effect, even you are a great scholar, but there's no possibility in subduing one's mind. Meditate and contemplate on Lojong is to bring perfection to one's mind training so that one can actualize Buddhahood for the benefit of others. The summarized meaning of transforming attitude. Mind transforming is happening within one's mind, our mental state, but one's speech must remain natural while changing the aspiration. Deconstruct the self-cherishing of self and increase the cherishing of others. Millions of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas descended to rescue us, but we are still in samsara because of this self-cherishing mind. Influenced by this ignorant mind and overwhelmed by negative karma, we are then introduced by negative actions. Lojong teaches us to cherish ourselves. Lojong teaches us to cherish others without discrimination. Practicing self-cherishing yoga and your inner thoughts will be in the process of changing. Less delusion, grasping and self-centered person, and more compassion. One does not need to change one's lifestyle, but all changes must come from one's mind. In the heart, one must be totally selfless. It's not appropriate to abandon your daily preliminary prayers once you have learned about Lojong. Instead of purifying past negative karma, you might enhance the obstacles to your practices. Realization and developing bodhicitta, loving kindness and compassion in oneself, should be done without the notice of others. You should not project yourself as a great practitioner. One of the samayas is not to mention about one's realization or they will degenerate. Geshe-la shared a story about Geshe Lama Kongcho's realizations, who lived as an ordinary monk and attained enlightenment within one lifetime, and all the signs of him being an enlightened being. Great Kadampa practitioners never change their external aspect while gaining the marvelous training of Lojong. When one is disrespected and abused by others, that is the most appropriate time to look into oneself and measure the illusion in us. When no one disturbs us, we usually feel subdued. One must put effort to purify one's anger or jealousy and apply the appropriate antidote. We must appreciate those harm givers by giving us the chance to practice Dharma. The fifth commitment, one must not speak of the defects or imperfections of others. Verbal and mental labeling and discrimination should be abandoned. One must show compassion and not in a form of pity. Example, you should express a positive mind when meeting sick people. We should not speak of other spiritual or worldly defects. For example, someone with broken samaya, bodhisattva vows, five lay vows, precepts, etc. This applies to both verbal and physical. We should not speak about monks or nuns who have disrobed. It should not even be in our mind. But an abbot who has given someone their vows, such persons have the right to speak of the other persons, those who have received the vows, their mistakes. In conclusion, one should not speak or think of others' faults. That's only advantage in searching for faults in oneself, as this will provide perfection of one's vows, practice, and not to commit new negative karmas. One should rather search good qualities in others. Even hell beings have good qualities. Once you have established a relationship with your guru, for example, whom you have taken initiation, commentary, and vows from, only search for the good qualities of one's guru. If one sees fault in one's guru, immediately apply remedy by saying, it's a reflection of my deluded mind. Once there is a doubt, one's practice will degenerate. For example, gurus manifest illness or death to show us the nature of samsaric suffering. Gurus score us with words like wrathful mantras to pacify our greatest ignorance and delusion. Gurus ignore us and appear to neglect us to teach us detachment. Applying mind training should also apply to our spouse, parents, children, family, friends, members, Dharma brothers and sisters, etc. Apply mind training in every aspect of our lives and meditate on your problems. You will eventually find it easier in time to come. Mind training teaches us to see the positive aspect and respect everybody's differences. One should also not view the Theravadian followers as lower than us. Non-believers should gain equal respect as well. The sixth commitment is not appropriate to think of others' shortcomings. That includes criticizing sanghas who represent the Buddhas and the vows they have taken. However, should you see faults in sanghas, one must think They are in the process of training, and wearing the Sangha robe do not make them a Buddha. One should not discriminate monks via the food they eat and their actions. Kishala told the story about the crazy monk movie, the crazy monk in the movie who had great realizations. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sorry, today, is it okay to recite in English? Because I don't have that sheet. No, we
recite in English, We recite in English.
We'll try Tibet in another class. Teaching prayers, page 5. To the founder, the endowed transcendent destroyer, the one gone beyond, the foe destroyer, the completely perfected, fully awakened being, perfect in knowledge and in good conduct, Sugata, knower of the world, supreme guide of human beings to be tamed, teacher of gods and human beings, to you, the completely and fully awakened one, the endowed transcendent destroyer, the glorious conqueror, the subduer from the Shakya clan, I prostrate, make offerings and go for refuge. To the founder, the endowed transcendent destroyer, the one gone beyond, the foe destroyer, the completely perfected, fully awakened being, perfect in knowledge and in good conduct, Sugata, knower of the world, supreme guide of human beings to be tamed, teacher of gods and human beings, to you, the completely and fully awakened one, the endowed transcendent destroyer, the glorious conqueror, the subduer from the Shakya clan, I prostrate, make offerings, and go for refuge. To the founder, the endowed transcendent destroyer, the one gone beyond, the foe destroyer, the completely perfected, fully awakened being, perfect in knowledge and in good conduct, Sugata, knower of the world, supreme guide of human beings to be tamed, teacher of gods and human beings, to you, the completely and fully awakened one, the endowed transcendent destroyer, the glorious conqueror, the subduer from the Shakya clan, I prostrate, make offerings, and go for refuge. When, O supreme amongst humans, you were born on this earth, you paced out 7 strides, then said, I am supreme in this world. To you who were wise then, I prostrate. With pure bodies, formed supremely pure, wisdom ocean like a golden mountain, fame that blazes in the 3 worlds, winner of the best, Lord, to you I prostrate. With the supreme sign, face like a spotless moon, color like gold, to you I prostrate. Dust free like you, the 3 worlds are not. Incomparably wise one, to you I prostrate. The Savior having great compassion, the Founder having all understanding, the field of merit with qualities like a vast ocean, to you the one gone to thusness I prostrate. The purity that frees one from attachment, the virtue that frees one from the lower realms, the one path, the supreme pure reality, to the Dharma that pacifies I prostrate. Those who are liberated and who also show the path to liberation, the holy field qualified with realizations, who are devoted to the moral precepts, to you the sublime community intending virtue, I prostrate. Homage to the Supreme Buddha, homage to the Dharma refuge, homage to the great Sangha, to all 3 ever devout, homage. To all worthy of respect, bowing with the bodies as many as all real atoms, in all aspects with supreme faith I pay homage. Do not commit any non-virtuous actions, perform only virtuous actions, subdue your mind thoroughly. This is the teaching of the Buddha. A star, a visual aberration, a flame of a lamp, an illusion, a drop of dew or a bubble, a dream, a flash of lightning, a cloud, see conditioned things as such. Through these merits may all sentient beings attain the rank of all seeing, subdue the foe of faults, and be delivered from samsara's ocean, perturbed by the waves of aging, sickness and death. Heart Sutra. I prostrate to the Arya Triple Gem. Thus did I hear at one time the Bhagavan was dwelling on mass of Vultures Mountain in Rajgriha, together with a great community of monks and a great community of bodhisattvas. At that time the Bhagavan was absorbed in the concentration on the categories of phenomena called profound perception.
Also at that time, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara looked upon the very practice of the profound perfection of wisdom and beheld those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Then through the power of Buddha, the Venerable Shariputra said this to the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara: how should any son of the lineage train who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom? He said that, and the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara said this to the Venerable Sharavatiputra: Shariputra, any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom should look upon it like this, correctly and repeatedly beholding those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Form is empty, emptiness is form, emptiness is not other than form, form is also not other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, likewise, all phenomena are emptiness, without characteristic, unproduced, unceased, stainless, not without stain, not deficient, not fulfilled. Shariputra, therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no compositional factors, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visual form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomenon. There is no eye element and so on, up to and including no mind element, and no mental consciousness element. There is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so on, up to and including no aging and death, and no extinction of aging and death. Similarly, there is no suffering, origination, cessation, and path. There is no exalted wisdom, no attainment, and also no non-attainment. Shariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, Bodhisattvas rely on and dwell in the perfection of wisdom, the mind without obscuration and without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reach the endpoint of nirvana. All the Buddhas who dwell in the three times also manifestly completely awakened to unsurpassable, perfect, complete enlightenment and relies on the perfection of wisdom. Therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the unsurpassed mantra, the mantra equal to the unequaled, the mantra that thoroughly pacifies all suffering, should be known as truth, since it is not false. The mantra of the perfection of wisdom is declared, Sayata Om Gati Gati Para Gati Parasam Gati Bodhisattva. Shariputra, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, should train in the profound perfection of wisdom like that. Then the Bhagavan arose from that concentration and commended the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara, saying, well said, son of the lineage, it is like that, it is like that. One should practice the profound perfection of wisdom, just as you have indicated, even the Tathagatas rejoice. The Bhagavan having thus spoken, the Venerable Sharavatiputra, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara, those surrounding in the entirety along with the world of God, humans, asuras, and pandavas were overjoyed and highly praised that spoken by the Bhagavan. Page 15, praise to Manjushri. Obeisance to my guru and protector Manjushri, who holds to his heart a scriptural text symbolic of seeing all things as they are, whose understanding shines forth as the sun, unclouded by defilements or traces of ignorance, who teaches in 60 ways, with the patient love of a father for his only son, or creatures caught in the prison of samsara, confused in the darkness of their ignorance, overwhelmed by their suffering. You whose dragon thunder proclamation of the Dharma arouses us from the stupor of our delusions and frees us from the iron chains of our karma, whose powerful sword of wisdom hews down suffering wherever its sprouts appear, clearing away the darkness of all ignorance. I entreat you, O Manjushri, whose princely body is adorned with the 112 marks of the Buddha, who has completed the 10 stages, achieving the highest perfection of the Bodhisattva, who has been cured from the beginning. O Manjushri, O loving one, with the brilliance of your wisdom, illuminate the darkness enclosing my mind, enlighten my intelligence and wisdom, so that I may gain insight into Buddha's words and the text that explain them.
Bhagavan, while having all the conducive conditions
such as obtaining precious human rebirth, the human rebirth which possesses all the freedoms to practice Dharma and encounter all the conducive conditions, such like meeting Mayanic gurus, and as well as encountering the inspiring Dharma brothers sisters, the Mayanic Dharma brothers sisters, and the place where conduct, you know, Buddha's teaching, you know, in through Lojong. So while obtaining all these opportunities and freedoms, if we don't practice the mind training teaching, then that brings about the delay of our liberation up to enlightenment. When oneself delay to become Buddha, and there's numberless beings who have karmic affinity with us, and their liberation dependent on our liberation of becoming Buddha, and that delays, and based on that, other numberless other living beings prolong their suffering in samsara. So by understanding this fact, I think that I must actualize fully enlightenment as soon as possible. So therefore, I need to accumulate extensive virtues, merits, need to do extensive purifications of past negative deeds by engaging into the Lojong practice, may be able to become Buddha as soon as possible. So therefore, that reason that I'm going to, you know, I'm going to put some effort for this one hour plus into this class. So one should think like that. Thank you. So as stated in the Vinaya Sutra by Buddha Shakyamuni himself, even to obtain, you know, higher rebirth such as a human rebirth in next lifetime, one need to, in this present life, one need to practice morality, ethic, such as refuge vow, or the but the most of, you know, five lay vows, and the Buddhist vows or Tantra vows, and whatever vows that one can preserve, then one should engage into the practice of six perfection, then conjoin with the always, you know, inspire to actualize higher rebirth. So as stated in the Vinaya Sutra, like that, then even to obtain human rebirth, we need such a great requirements that we need to practice vows, we need to practice six perfection, we need to and always, you know, pray and wish to obtain higher rebirth. Then to become a Buddha, to obtain the Buddhahood, definitely, you know, we require greater efforts, which is to actualize different stages of the commitments and the vows in our life, such as the 18 commitments of the Lojong teachings, are very necessary or very important to apply into our daily life. And at the same time, put one's very best effort to engage into the practice of six perfection. Then at the same time, always tell oneself, you know, express from one's bottom of heart that I must become Buddha. I must actualize Buddha. If possible, I must actualize Buddha within this very lifetime. If possible, this very cushion, on this very cushion. So these teachings come about. So we are on the discussion on the 18 commitments, and we cover up to the number 6 commitments. So we will continue from the number 7, which is on page 119, the last paragraph. So I will follow from the text. So here it says, discard all expectations of rewards. So if I want to summarize the meaning of this commitment, then you can put in the word that abandon any hope for result. You know, abandon any hope for result. You know, even in the form of practice of dharma, such as the practice of six perfection, like making charity, even you know, even the practice to become Buddha also should be, you know, shouldn't expect for the one's own benefit, not the selfish benefit, like that. So then the commentary stated that discard all expectations such as respect for your mind training, either from material gift or service, and fame, protections against harm caused by human, non-human, and this and future lives, including the attainment of joyful human, the celestial existence, and the attainment of nirvana, you know, including the attainment of nirvana. the engagement in the practice of mind training teaching, you know, not for the purpose of material gain, not for the purpose of fame that people might offer to you, saying that, you know, you are a great practitioner of mind training teaching. I regard you as a great practitioner. So, you know, you shouldn't practice mind training teaching for that purpose. And you shouldn't practice mind training teaching for the reason that you might obtain a lot of offerings, a lot of gifts, a lot of rewards. And you shouldn't practice mind training teaching for that purpose. And also shouldn't practice mind training teaching to gain service, like to obtain service by others. Also not for the name. You know, you are great Kadamba yogi since you practice mind training teaching. You know, in the past, Kadamba great masters, because of mind training teaching, because of practicing mind training teaching, they were rewarded in the great, you know, name called Kadamba geshes or Kadamba masters. Therefore, I also, to actualize those fame and name, therefore I must engage in the Kadamba teaching or the mind training teaching. Then that's the wrong motivation. And practicing mind training teaching also shouldn't be for the purpose of gaining protection from human harms. You know, if I practice mind training teaching so that I can able to protect myself gaining harm from humans, that also wrong motivation. And practicing mind training teaching also shouldn't practice for the purpose of gaining protection from non-humans, like such as spirits, thinking that if I practice mind training teaching so that I can able to eliminate, or I can able to subdue the spirits, or I can able to gain protection from the spirits. If you practice mind training teaching that way, also wrong motivation. And if you practice mind training teaching for the purpose of gaining, you know, higher rebirth in next lifetime, such as human and God, that also in the wrong motivation of practicing mind training teaching. Even you practice mind training teaching for the joyful, you know, the attainment of the human celestial, you know, all the human goodness, also wrong purpose. Even practice mind training teaching to actualize higher rebirth, such as a human and perfect human rebirth in future lifetime, such as a precious human rebirth in future lifetime, even that also wrong motivation to practice mind training teaching. Not only that, if we practice mind training teaching for the purpose of obtaining the nirvana, which is the freedom state within oneself alone from the samsaric cycle existence, that also wrong motivation. You know, so somehow all are wrong motivation. Ensure that you have no expectation even of the Buddhahood for your own sake. Okay, now I want everybody to explain this, you know. So rest, I take care, yeah? So now this one word. Ensure that you have no expectation even of Buddhahood for your own sake. So, you know, the motivation to practice mind training teaching, in order to actualize the realization in mind training teaching, to gain the ultimate benefit from engaging into mind training teaching, you know, the motivation shouldn't even be to obtain Buddhahood, you know, to obtain or to become Buddha for your own sake. So, what is the interpretation of this word, this sentence? Thank you. Yes, that's the. So here, it doesn't mean that the motivation of practicing mind training teaching for Buddhahood. But here, it's ensuring us that if the motivation of obtaining Buddhahood for your own self-centered expectations or your self-centered purpose, then that is wrong motivation. So if you are engaging in the mind training teaching, the motivation should be is to actualize Buddhahood for the benefit of others only. For the benefit of others only. So if you engage in mind training teaching in that manner, not only mind training teaching, every single aspect of teaching that you engage to actualize the Buddhahood should be intended to only to benefit other beings. Not even mention I and other beings or I and all living beings. You know, you have to skip I, then you include entire race of the beings. And that helps us to engage into the essence of the practice is to subdue or to purify the self-cherishing mind, which is the enemy, which is the greatest obstruction to us to actualize fully enlightenment. You know, for that reason. For where the demons to become aware of this. Do not harbor do not harbor impatience and excessive expectation even for the meditative qualities. So do not cherish means do not cling, you know, or do not impose, you know, the practice of mind training teaching even for the attainment of the realization in meditation, meditative qualities means the two stages of meditative qualities such as the analytical meditative realizations and the single-pointed absorption, the meditative realizations can be in the two aspects of meditation on impermanent, dead and impermanent, and even to the two aspects of meditation in emptiness. You know. So the purpose of mind training teaching. To learning mind training teaching shouldn't be for the purpose of even for that. For where the demons to become aware of this, so they could create obstacles. So what do you understand from this? Why shouldn't be all the mentioned motivations are wrong to a wrong motivation to practice Lojong. The reason here is stated is that will make aware, that will make the demons alert to harm us. You know, why? What do you mean by demon here? Not the scary one, you know. What is the demon refer? the self-cherishing mind. The demon referred to the self-cherishing mind. To become aware of this, the self-cherishing mind will, you know, when you express, when you express the expectation of realization in or engagement of the practice in mind training and teaching for the purpose of gaining all the including the higher highest expectation to become a Buddha, even for the sake of others. If that, you know, you cherish for that, that make aware this self-cherishing mind to alert, and instead of benefiting, rather it will disturb to actualize the success in the practice of the demolishing the mind and the self-cherishing mind. It's quite confusing, but like that. You understand? Yes, yeah? Okay, good. Actually, I'm quite confused. Anyway, thank you. Thank you for understanding. So even you exert strong effort with no loss of interest for the long time, but still get no result, do not become discouraged. So even if you try long time, you know, with such a great effort to tame our mind, to transform our, you know, emotional disturbance into a path, or the negative emotions into a positive attitude, or the suffering into a happiness, you know, never discourage ourselves. So you see, so in our life, you know, we have so much difficulties in family, you know, in business, you know, in our life. Then after that, we met Dharma. So many of us practice Dharma, some are more than 20 years, you know, 10 years, 1 year, a few months. But still, you know, some kind of like, you're still almost the same. You know, some your mental attitude, the way of handling the day-to-day life, the emotion, there's not much development. It's almost still the same, you know. So here, the teaching advising us, never to give up, do not discourage, you know, because it is still benefits. The benefit is the effort that you have put learning Dharma always help to enhance the two inspirations, the ultimate bodhicitta and conventional bodhicitta. By doing that, naturally accumulate extensive merit, naturally gain purifications. That's how that can able to get closer to the perfection or the Buddhahood. So therefore, never discourage and never give up. Even until now, you never see even a single sign of you gain the realization and practice. So this is the number 7 commitment. You know, the advice us to be aware. You know, what state we are, and even we find out that we are still, you know, never progress in our practice, but still make sure that never give up. So the number 8 commitment: discard poisonous food. You know, abandon poisonous food. So here, discard poisonous food. So what is the interpretation of poisonous food? Have you read any of the other commentaries, mind training teaching on 7-point mind training? Or you have, I'm sure many of you have received the commentary on 7-point mind training teaching. So how do you interpret the poisonous food? The Himalayan food? The high cholesterol food? Or too much chili food? Or MSG, the MSG gin, or the poisonous refer to what? Give some suggestions. In some teachings, you know, they use this word, and before you come to class, if you happen to read the commentary below, also you can able to answer. It's a little bit, but it's not cover everything. The poisonous food is referred to the delusion. The poisonous food refer to delusion. You know, start from ignorance. You know, the self-grasping mind. Then all the six root delusions, and including the 20 secondary afflictive emotions, and rest of the confusions. You know, including the superstitious mind. Anxiety, all those are the poisonous food, including, as I said, the superstitious mind, blind faith, also poisonous food. Blind faith also can be poisonous food. Worldly concern is poisonous food. That the food they are referring, poisonous food referring for that. It's not the eating food. So poisonous food is referring for that. You see. So, when we pray, let's say when we pray to Tara, you make a fruit offering, candle offering, flower offering, then kneel down and pray to Tara, with the worldly concern. Then, it's like you are like exactly striking, eating poisonous food like that. Like poisonous food, very colorful. The taste so delicious, so much SMG, and a lot of chili, so delicious, looks so good, you know. But you don't know inside is poison. You are consuming, you're just eating it like that. So exactly when we pray, when we you know, practice in front of Tara with the worldly concern, with the delusion, you know. Then when people see you, or when people look at you. Even yourself, when think of yourself, you are kind of like doing so much practice. You are so devoted to Tara. You are like serious practitioner. But in fact, you are creating the cause of samsara. That's why it's become poison. That's why called as a poisonous food. We are like consuming so-called as a like wonderful dharma, but in fact, it become a cause of samsara. So how it not to be like that is to do the practice with no self-interest, to do the practice selflessly, to do the practice without any self-centered, as mentioned earlier, not even for the enlightenment. For your own sake alone. Whatever practice you do with the motivation, you do with the mental attitude, even not for the sake of your own Buddhahood, your own sake of Buddhahood. Then, whatever form of practice you do, it will not become poisonous food. You become delicious organic food. I think, organic food. So it make very clear. It make very clear what I understand. Is really telling us what is pure dharma and what is non dharma. You know, as long as if for one's self-centered purpose is all a non dharma, even thousands of candle you light. Even millions of dollars you donate, you sound like generosity. Even meditate for ages, you know, in the cave, you know. As long as it's assisting the self-cherishing mind of I, non-dharma, cause of samsara. If we really want to practice, we totally let go that part and do only for the other, not even mention I. yourself. Then, small practice, big practice, great practice, everything become cause for enlightenment. When the practice become, when the causes become cause for enlightenment, all the temporary benefit, such as prosperity, long life, good health, all naturally comes. All naturally comes. Even you didn't pray for, but it naturally comes. So like that. So it's very clear. It's very, very important statement. You think very clear. So we have to always remember poisonous food. You know, it's quite easy to remember. So whenever we do practice, remember this poisonous food. You have to be careful. Otherwise it sound like dharma, but it can be cause of samsara. You know, cause of so it's a very important statement. So Mrs. Gan, you want to say something? You're right. I agree with you. What are you doing? After three poisoners, immediately you have to run away. Good. Okay. I think this is very important, you know, even like, you know, all of us, either senior or new or whatever. You know, to make a borderline, border. You know, what is really dharma? What is non-dharma? Because everything sounds like dharma. Turning the prayer wheel sounds like dharma. Putting so many statues sounds like dharma. Praying. You know, so much chanting sounds like dharma. You know, and making charity sounds like dharma. Receiving so many teachings, initiation sounds like dharma. Practicing lojong sounds like dharma. You know, it's like, don't you think that whatever we do here it sounds like dharma? But when we really think carefully, many things is not really dharma. Many things is a creation of cause for samsara. There's not much different than we're just hanging outside. Just in the different aspect only. Maybe some virtue, but still cause of samsara. You know, so the purpose of for us to go under the guidance of Guru Shakyamuni Buddha, you know, Buddha Dharma, is to practice Dharma. And that Dharma, if we really want to do, the mental attitude, the motivation, the whatever, you know, the purpose that you are doing, be initiated by selflessness. That's why the emptiness becomes so important. Emptiness help us to, you know, eliminate the self-grasping. Eliminate the self-grasping. You know, the moment you eliminate the self-grasping, it is start to, you know, actualize the purpose. It is start to, you know, express the purpose for others' purpose. Is it? So therefore, even in the Lojong teaching, even in this particular commentary, the ultimate anime that it always disturb us, always harm us, is the self-grasping mind. Is the ultimate, is the real enemy. The real enemy is not outside. It's inside within us, which is self-grasping attitude or self-grasping mind. We always concerned of I. Always comfort the I. Always disagree with others, but only agree with the I. So those are the grasping which is regarded as enemy. And in particularly, the grasping, the independent grasping of non-existent I, and that's the worst one. Independent grasping of non-existent I, seeing without dependent in any cause and effect, just independently exists, you know, its own sight, and that is the root. You know, so due to that, the all sort of negative creations, you know, comes into our life, and that's how that we continue to suffer in samsara. So here, poisonous food is the hardboiling of self-interest in the depth of your heart, you see, means the instinct of us is the hard-burning, you know, hard-boiling of self-interest. Harboring of self-interest, you know, which always, you know, which always fit for the interests of selfish I, who always support, who always encourage the selfish I, is the harboring of self-interest, which lies deep in our heart. We even cannot differentiate that with the wisdom, that with the clear mind, which is Buddha nature. We even don't know how to differentiate that. So never fall to perceive of self-grasping as never fail to perceive the self-grasping as an enemy. So how to rid of it? You know, there's a way to rid of, you know, that problem is to always remind yourself. Always remind yourself this. The self-grasping is the enemy, not a friend, not something is good. Self-grasping is enemy, and it is the one that which bring harm to you. So always remember that. Always tell yourself, self-grasping is no good. Self-grasping only bring pain to me. Self-grasping I should eliminate, purify. Always remind oneself. Then in order to do that, one should learn about what really means self-grasping. So in order to know, differentiate what really means self-grasping, you should start to practice the self-cherishing of others. When you learn about self-cherishing of others, you can start to clearly differentiate what really means self-cherishing of oneself. You know, how difficult for us to cherish others, how much effort you need to put, but how easy to cherish oneself, you know, and how many times the self-cherishing brings about discomfort in our life. But at the same time, the providing of self-cherishing others, the happiness that you receive in the long term, you know, is always has a great advantage of that. So by understanding these two differences, then try to practice and learn about perceiving the self-grasping is the enemy. That's the enemy in us. So therefore, it's never fall to perceive self-grasping as an enemy, or fail to let go of self-cherishing and the thought that grasps the substantial reality of things. Fail to let go of self-cherishing. You know, even though we understand self-cherishing is not good, self-cherishing is harmful for us, it causes suffering in us, but there's always has a difficult for us to let go. Always we have a difficult for us to let go the self-cherishing us. Always have a difficult for us to let go of self-cherishing mind. You know, the root of the cause, the self-cherishing mind, very difficult to let go. So how to let go? There is a way to let go. So we have to learn about how way to let go. The way to let go is to understand the nature of impermanence of I, the nature of non-existence of the self-independent I. The way to let go is the disadvantage of cherishing the non-existent I, and understanding of the advantage of cherishing others, including understanding the advantage of cherishing others, will bring the ultimate happiness, which is the liberation. And the disadvantage, the ultimate disadvantage of cherishing oneself, is brings about no end of samsara. So by meditating, by contemplating on that, one can able to eventually let go of self-grasping mind. But when we don't meditate that way, then even how much we say that self-cherishing is bad, but somehow we will never let go. So in our day-to-day life, you know, we do many different practices. But when things, something trickle you, something like just pinch, you know, somebody pinch you, somebody scold you, or somebody take away your things, that's the time that you struggle. And that's the time that you feel the how strong self-cherishing is there. You know, and we do experience every day-to-day life. You know, whatever we want, we do not get. Whatever we do not want, we get, and we suffer. When we whatever things that we want, when we don't get, we suffer. Whatever we do not want, it comes into our life, again we suffer. What is the reason? Because we are unable to let go of self-cherishing mind. That's the reason. You know. And that's the time that you can analyze how strong self-cherishing mind is. You know. You can in fact analyze the degree of self-cherishing mind in oneself when such kind of experiences in our life, day-to-day life. Worse than that, the self-substantial reality of things is even worse than self-cherishing mind. The substantial reality of things refer to the independent existence of the phenomena. The perception which perceives the instinct independent existence of its own sight, which is the false of emptiness, which is the opposite of emptiness. And that is even worse. That is even greater enemy which brings about suffering in our life. Substantial reality of things means inherent existence. It's referring to the inherent existence. You know, the inherent existence which is always lies in us. You know, whatever we see, whatever we touch, we feel, we hear, the instinct expression from our attitude is self-independent existent. So as long as we don't realize that, we will never realize emptiness. When all of us, you know, look at this cup, look at this mug, you know, we never interpret in the first instinct mental label, the perception label, we never understand this is dependently existing, isn't it? The moment when we see this cup is there, the perception of the expression of perceiving cup is there itself is substantial reality of things. Means the inherent existence. Means we perceive the thing in the nature of inherent existence. That means the emptiness is very far. And that means grasping is there. And that grasping is so subtle. You know, so subtle. It is in a subtle level. So don't you think it's how difficult for us to actually part, you know, be apart, you call apart, be separated from the grasping mind. So difficult. The moment, you know, when we wake up, the moment you go and get your clothes, the moment you see the dress, we never have a kind of like a thought, is it the collision existence of dependent arising cause and condition? You never interpret that way, isn't it? Immediately, clothes, dress, food, you know, see person like that. You know, just my looking at you, you know, that perception, the way of perceiving is you exist from its own side, that's it. You are totally exist from your own side. I never ever, in my instinct level, I never ever see you are actually exist there based on cause and different conditions, that's why you are there. I never interpret that way. And those who realize emptiness, you know, the moment you open eye, mic, already start to see part and particle, cause and conditions of this existence of mic here. We never just see open, mic, not like that. Open, mind, not like that. You know, immediately interpret. So because of one can able to interpret the cause and collisions existent, rather than seeing the mic solidly independent there, and then when the mic suddenly breaks or when mic stops, I won't get angry. When the mind stops, when suddenly some electricity problem, mine stops, I won't get disturbed or because of the mic stop, because I understand the collision of cause and conditions, different factors already picture cause and the existing in the base of cause and conditions. But since I projected the self-independent existence of mic, if something goes wrong, I might bang the mic. You know, how dare you stop? You know, in the middle of talking, how can you blame that this mic is no good? Then it start to, even though like you start to express, oh, maybe the company, the mic, the brain is no good, all sort of thing, but it's too late. Too late. All become in the expression of prostration, which is in the expression led by the led by self-independent existence, the what you call the inherent existence. So it's a very, very complexity, to really grab this point. Do you get something? So substantial reality of things, and this substantial reality of things in this text, in this Lojong teaching, is referring based on the Pasangika Madhyamika view. But in a certain teachings, when you see a substantial reality of things, can be interpreted emptiness based on the four different schools. But here it's referring based on the Pasangika Madhyamika school. So this makes everything you do into cause of silent existence because of the precept, because of the inherent existing perception is exists within us. Due to that, whatever relation with outer phenomena is all a creation of samsara. It's almost like no chance to create a proper dharma, proper cause of liberation. So therefore, again, emptiness comes in the picture, which is so important. When you realize emptiness, you really start to create a right cause for enlightenment. When you don't realize emptiness, it's all most likely mixture, and most likely cause of samsara. And even, very limit it becomes cause of enlightenment. Because we do things in the perceiving the true nature of existence of the things, including dharma. Even when we perceive Buddha, we see Buddha in the nature of true existence. When we pray to become Buddha, that also, the prayer also become, the perception is perceiving which exists in the nature of its own sight. Sure. Be mindful in the understanding of dependent arising, dependent on the cause and conditions, part and particles, everything, like always to remind oneself, whatever happens, whatever movement, all has a reason. The reason could be different causes. If something good thing happens, you immediately, instead of grasping on the good thing, rather you reflect to the cause. Say, oh, this good thing happened because I created a good cause. Something bad thing happens. Oh, this bad thing happened because I created the bad cause. So that will eliminate the grasping. Let's say that some bad thing come into one's life. If we don't have emptiness understanding, dependent understanding, we will cling on that. We'll grasp on that. How come this happened? It's like so concrete, so real, so independent, so there, always there. It's kind of like ever existing there, ever existed there. In fact, 1 minute ago, it came into your life. The problem came into your life, it's just 1 minute ago. But the grasping kind of make you feel that problem is existing almost like ages ago, you know, the suffering that you experience, the grasping that they interpret to you, the suffering is almost like, it's kind of like gifted to you, you know, from many, many lifetimes, you know, like that. But when you start to understand the dependent existence, oh, I'd rather, you know, I'd rather go and find the cause. Why this happened? So then you start to find the root, the where the problem comes. When you go to find the root, the where the problem comes, the problem actually is not in outer factor, it's in you. And when you analyze the problem, in fact, the self-grasping attitude, the ego, then when you discover, oh, it's actually it's me, I am the one who cannot tolerate this problem. If I can tolerate, actually it's nothing. It's just mainly just labor of feeling, that's it. If I interpret this feeling into an even joyous moment or exciting moment in life, then this suffering doesn't even become suffering. It's just one kind of experience in the life, including death. When death comes, never mind. It's just one kind of role in the life. Just one event, and just one event, changing of skin, like how a snake changes the skin. Just one event of changing of the body, that's it. You know, why? Because you already create, accumulated this contaminated body, you just have to leave. So it's the same thing when you experience any sickness, when you experience any sickness or mental difficulty, you know, you understand the cause. The fundamental cause is self-grasping, the self-ego, this cherishing, you know, so concrete, the permanent grasping of that problem, you know, which is like nothing to do with anybody, caused by that. That's it, you know, like kind of like a solid grasping of independent existence of the problem in you, you know. So once you analyze that, then gradually you start to find it's lack of understanding or dependent arising. That's why I grasp so much, you know. So therefore, I must eliminate this, therefore I must think of emptiness. When you think of emptiness, you start to when you think of dependent arising or emptiness, then you start to realize it's just mainly labeled. Mainly labeled. The feeling is there, but just mainly labeled. You know, the process, the experience is there, but it's mainly labeled. That's why exactly what Lama Tsongkhapa stated, that every single existent is in the existence of mainly labeled. Just merely labeled, that's the word, merely labeled. Exists but non-exist. Exists in a merely label, but the independent of that suffering is non-existent. Independent of that enlightenment also non-existent. But merely label in the perfection cause, collation of cause and condition, yes, conventionally enlightenment is there. So like that, you know, you get it? Oh, okay. When we want to go and find the root, you have to go and find the self-grasping first. Then after that, after discovering self-grasping, then you should look for self-cherishing. After looking for self-cherishing, then look for the self-cherishing or I. After discovering self-cherishing or I, then look for self-cherishing or phenomena. So that's it goes. But when this negative emotion come into our life, first the self-cherishing of phenomena come first, reverse way. Then is established self-cherishing of self-cherishing of phenomena comes first. Then self-cherishing of I established. Then self-grasping established, because cherishing and grasping has a different what you call it. The heaviness, the self-cherishing is more intense. Grasping is a bit more grosser level, you know. So that I interpret. Anyway, there's a two word, self-cherishing and self-grasping. So my own kind of interpretation, understanding, cherishing is more kind of intense, more wider coverage. Grasping, yes, similar, but it's just some different there, but lighter. So once you discover self-cherishing of I, then one can able to spot self-grasping of I. Once you spot self-grasping of I, then one can able to spot the ego, what you call the I, the ego, you know, the egoistic delusion, the egoistic the grasping. Once you establish the egoistic grasping, then one start to realize who helps to promote that ego, and the promoter, in fact, is the anger, jealousy, you know, attachment, hatred, you know, the six delusions, the 20 secondary delusions, all are the one like a kind of army who actually the veteran who go for the, how to say, who accompany the general, you know, like that, you know. So once you discover six delusion, you start to roughly can able to have a wisdom to analyze the 20 secondary delusion. Once you start to understand 20 secondary delusion, you start to capture the gross delusions. Once you capture the gross delusions, you already kind of like encounter the cause of the problem. Once you encounter the cause of the problem, then either you want to use knife or hammer or whatever, then you can just chop. Something like that. Oh, sorry, not hammer, not knife. Or say, basis, emptiness, dependent arising. So that's the what you call the antidote. So then again, how to extinguish that? How to eliminate that? Just by saying, oh, dependent arising, does it help? It doesn't. You know. So once you discover that, then you have to contemplate. You have to habituate dependent arising. You know, in a consistent label, until it becomes spontaneous in your mental continuum. The day without reasoning, it becomes the instinct label of understanding the existing in the manner of dependent arising. That's the day you realize emptiness. Like that. Yes, you want to say? I think your way will definitely help. It's one of the solution, you know. I mean, individual, you know, how you want to apply the antidote to eliminate the grasping mind. You know, like you can apply your way like that. But of course, there's also many other ways, you know, to handle these emotions. But of course, your way also, you know, is can be done. I mean, that is good. Yeah, because this is a very service level of understanding that there's so many factors correlation even to actualize food, even to consume the food, you know. By understanding that you try to transform, you know, those eating action in the manner of practice, like a generosity, you know, or in the practice of enhancing understanding of emptiness, I mean, you can do that. You know, it's beneficial. You can do that. Yeah, but the thing is that much more deeper level that you can. You know, this to meditate on emptiness in relation to any action, including eating food. There's also, you know, much more deeper level way of practice, you know, practice. But of course, gesture of like offering food is to accumulate merit by you know, offering to the, you know, the Buddhas, you know, offering to the Buddhas. This is to accumulate merit. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, offering food, you know, has many different ways to, bring into practice. Offering food can become one of the, you know, one of the very profound practice of generosity, very profound practice of, you know, accumulation merit by making offering to the Buddhas, and also eating food. You know, one can also to discover the understanding of dependent arising, even just to actualize one grain of rice. You know, how many different factors that need to actualize, you know, have to come together, and also to understand at least, you know, the gross level that it is not existing without any factor. Because even one grain of rice, it dependent on numberless beings, dependent on many beings, you know, it dependent on the farmer, dependent on the people, you know, the money that you earn, even the money also dependent on the company that where you work, you know, even that company, you know, dependent on many different factors, country and all sort of things, you know. So in fact, again, you know, why you have a karma to actually like consume this rice is dependent on the kindness of other living beings. So many beings sacrificed to, you know, to bring this one grain of rice, you know. Then to enhance the practice of compassion, you know, practice of generosity in relation to those beings who sacrifice to actualize one grain of rice that which are consuming. So it's a vast practice. You know, even the yoga of eating, you know, there's so many practices can do. There's no like kind of like, okay, only this much limit practice that you can actualize from the food offering. There's unbelievable practice you can do, you know, unbelievable food practice you can do. Labor and merely labor. Southern Tika, the question is, what is the difference from labor and merely labor, you know, in relation to the emptiness understanding? Southern Tika Madhyamika, which is Madhyamika school, which is the final school of emptiness. But within the Madhyamika school, there's two schools. The first one is Southern Tika Madhyamika school, then the final one is Pasangika Madhyamika school. So Guru Shakyamuni Buddha, Lama Tsongkhapa, Nagarjuna, their view on emptiness is on Pasangika Madhyamika school, you know, the emptiness. So Southern Tika Madhyamika school, in order to establish the existence of phenomena, they cannot establish the conventional existence of phenomena just merely label. Yes, they do assert its labeling exist, but they cannot assert mainly labeling exist. Why they cannot assert mainly labeling exist? Because it need one factor from the object side in order to subject to label to actualize the conventional existence. So because of that, that the one factor, you know, from the object side, from the, in order to say muck, from the muck side, one factor, one substance should exist from there, so that I can so that I can impute, I can label this is muck. So then muck conventionally really exists. But the final school, the Pasangika Madhyamika school, if that's the assertion of emptiness or dependent arising, then you fall into one of the extreme, nihilism extreme. If even one single factor exists from its own side, it's already independent existing from its own side, already inherent existing, you know, inherent existing. The conventional label of existence of phenomena should be merely label, means only label, only in the basis of labeling. There's nothing, not even a one single subtle atom is existing from the object side. So this that's the reason use the word called merely. So the merely, you know, it distinguish, it differentiate the view on emptiness from the Southern Tika Madhyamika school and Pasangika Madhyamika school. That much different, otherwise same. Like that. One single thing, let's say, this one single thing can be very subtle atom. Let's say for this mug, one subtle atom. Without one subtle atom, just simply say muck, muck doesn't come. There's you know, there's one single atom. Then yes, dependent on many factors, many hundreds and thousands of atoms, and the company, the way they make the muck, every, you know, the designer of the color, the people, so everything to come together. Then yes, then call muck, then muck exist. You know, without having one single atom, just put it say muck. Is there's no way, there's no way you can actualize a muck. It sounds like quite real also, you know. The way the Southern Tika assertion on emptiness, the existence of the conventional label, it sounds like real. You know, it sounds like we are actually more familiar to that. We also think something should be there, you know. Otherwise, how to just like close your eye and muck, you know. Muck, you know, like almost like grabbing in the darkness, you know. Merely using the word, you know, you get what I mean? You see? So now, but if you think carefully, yes, Pasangika is still the right. Why is it right? Pasangika is so detailed, you know. You don't have to stuck on one single atom to be existing from there to establish the conventional existing. You don't need nothing from there, because the reality is that nothing is from its own side. Even the atom, let's say if you want to label as the atom, one single atom, In order to actualize the form, you need something, isn't it? That something is start from where? Atom, isn't it? All these solid things is start from atom. No atom, no basis of atom. How to actualize solid thing? The scientifically is true, isn't it? No single atom. How to actualize this solid thing? Must be something. So it must be something, isn't it? So that again, the pasangika, the last school, pasangika said no need such thing. Why? The fundamental thing is, if you go to search, let's say the subtle atom, how come the subtle atom exists on there? Why not, if you don't believe, why not you make the subtle atom also divide into part and particles? You also divide into like 100 pieces, and you go to find again, you go to find the self exist, the self establish, the root atom. When you go to find, you also can't find. Then they might say, oh no, that one, that the smallest one, could be the one that which self establish from the object side. Then when you bring the smallest atom into the table, onto the table, again that divide into small pieces and ask which one is the one. So pasangika might say you fall into a fall. You trap into a fall. You said only one single atom is necessary, that you pointed that one single atom, but now that one single atom become 10 pieces. Now you already established from the object side, you have to establish 10 pieces, otherwise cannot actualize a mark. Before you say need one, now become 10. If the 10 also divide into 100, become 100 things that actualize from its own side. So, pasangika said, saudandika, you are shameful. You sound like madhyamika, who follow the middle path, emptiness, dependent arising, but you are almost no different than Vaivasika. You so-called non-existing, inherent exist, non-existing of inherent, but in fact, your grasping is exactly grasping on inherent existence. Then, Pasangika tells Saudandika, you fall into inner nihilism. He says, You fall into inanalism, so you are no different. You go down, no different than the Vaivasika, no different. Rather, you openly say, I assert self-independent existing. Then Saudandika said, No. How can there's no self-independent existing? It must exist by labeling. Only exists in the label. So there is a debate like that. So, headache. But in fact, this is the point that we have. Their debate help us to actually find out the truth, find out the final view of emptiness. So again, you can refer to Lamrim. I don't know whether you call it wisdom chapter or where it talks about emptiness. I mean, later in the BP class, there's also a section of study on emptiness. You should study that. Then there's various books which talks about emptiness, especially based on the pasangika view. Then you try to read more. You try to research more. Then in the class we do more question answer. I think that's the way to learn. Otherwise, it's not much thing to put into a word to explain. So when we do very strong discussion question answer, then maybe there's a way to find out what exactly is. So that again, your example, my one of teacher Kinsu Losan Siring, I think more than 80-90 years old. He is one of the greatest scholar today's time in Three Great Monastery. Who was even well respected by Sonat Dalai Lama on the understanding of emptiness. He also said he really still don't understand what exactly emptiness is. And he been like every day debating and never end the debate. until today. He's already age of, I think, 1890 something. And he started very young age in Tibet, a great scholar, regarded one of the best scholar in emptiness understanding. He said like that. So if we don't do any question answer, if we don't have any question, I don't know whether it's a right, good sign or not good sign, I have no idea. Something like that. Oh? Yes. Pasang kika, yeah. Yeah. No. They use, like, exist based on label, yeah. Exist. I mean, it have to be like a combination of two factors. Label and from the object side too. I don't know exact word how use, but it's I mean label, you know, label exist. Pasangika probably can say label exist, but Pasangika says label. Pasangika would say merely label. So that's the difference. Tope pardasam, tope tasam. So tope tasam, labeling. Tope parta, tope partazam, mainly labeling. Yeah. So this makes everything you do into cause of self existence, thus binding you evermore within self existence and giving rise to suffering. Since these are all like poisonous food, you must discuss them. So we are here, isn't it? Yeah, discard them. So we should discard delusions, a self-grasping mind, you know. So that's the meaning of discarding the poisonous food. So then number 9 commitment. Do not maintain inappropriate loyalty. So again, this one is the, you know, the word they use this way, but the meaning, you know, is difficult to, you know, get the meaning, you know. So here, anyway, it says, this means you should not refrain from expressing condemnation out of disapproval of unjust act committed by the others. So what do you get? Do not maintain inappropriate loyalty. This means you should not refrain from expressing condemnation out of disapproval of unjust act committed by others. Okay. Before that, I'd like to say, committed by others. The others refer to what? Once we get that, then we will get the meaning of all this phrase. The unjust act committed by others. Is like you and you know, I, we and others. That other is referring to that other or something else. The others is not referring to the person. So other referring to what? So I already clear, not referring to the person. So what do you think? If it's not referring to a person, so referring to what? The mind. Let's say mind is, I don't think so. This means you should not refrain from expressing condemnation out of disapproval of unjust act committed by others. It is quite common. In fact, it's not quite common. It's very common. I think even yesterday, I think Dakini's talk and I think many of you have seen her directly. We receive advice. She always actually emphasize. She do emphasize, you know, that. So anyway, I think it's the others refer to delusion. Others here refer to delusion. So this means you should not refrain from expressing condemnation out of deceivable or unjust act committed by others, committed by delusion. So therefore, the whole conclusion meaning is do not follow delusion. Both the delusion here, the delusion within ourselves and delusion within others. Any delusion, he has referring, do not follow any delusion. Do not just refrain from expressing condemnation, means blame or disapproval or unjust act, you know, as long as come from delusion, you know, should not refrain it. Yeah. Okay? Okay, then the commitment, 10 commitment, do not torment which malicious bender. Whatever task befall you, do not engage in malicious jokes that tear at others' heart or cause them to lose their composure, regardless of their capability, avoiding insulting and speaking harshly to others, whether close or distant, good or bad. So I think this one is quite easy, yeah? So the overall meaning is do not retaliate to verbal abuse. You know, do not retaliate to verbal abuse, whether it's close one or whether it's, you know, distant, whether it's bad or whether it's good, whether it's, you know, like that, you know. So then number 11, the commitment is do not lie in ambush. Do not lie in ambush. So here, do not harbor vengeance for wrong done to you, waiting for an opportunity moment to retaliate. So it's quite clear, yeah? So do not wait in abuse. Do not wait in ambush. So can you give just one or two kind of examples for this? Like some one or two examples so that, you know, like we can relate easier for, you know, our day-to-day life. Okay, why not give one example for the 10 commitment before going to the 11th? Do not torment with the malicious banter. So, give me one example. Maybe I can say one. You know, in your heart, you think other person is like useless, such a negative, you know, like it's like terrible. But in your speech, oh, you see, he is Bodhisattva, you know, he's like a Buddha, you know, in front of people, you know, like, you know, or make fun of him with using all the nice words, sweet words, you know. That also can be, isn't it? Can I give that as example? Is that okay? you know, so even that, no, and also it's hurting others. And somehow the others can feel that, you know, that you are a bit too much. Even you want to praise a bit too much, you know, it's very unrelevant, you know. Instead of like being, it's a sarcastic. Okay, so maybe something like that. It's okay. Okay, then how about the commitment 11? Do not lie in ambush. Yeah, I think that's yeah, can say that. Yeah. So commitment 12, do not strike at the heart. So then here the commentary, toward both human and non-human, avoid delving into their weak points. So it's similar to what you said. With non-humans, for instance, you should avoid uttering fears, life extracting mantras. In the case of human, you should avoid unearthing, for instance, their moral lapses in situation where many people are around. So that means if spirit is harming you, so chanting mantra to avoid them, it sounds like it's not so right, you know. What do you get? You read the commentary. Toward both human and non-human, avoid delving into their weak points. With non-humans, for instance, you should avoid uttering fierce life extracting mantras. It sounds like that? It sounds what I say like that? The meaning just now I said is like when a spirit harming you, then you take the advantage of chant the powerful mantra and try to chase them away. We have a good excuse, motivation. Yeah, because you know, like let's say, if we want to do a puja for spirit harms, you know, we really check carefully when is the weakest point. So then that day we perform the puja and chase away. Like naga harm, we check the naga day, and that's the day we choose to perform the naga puja. You know? So that means we should perform naga puja when not naga day. So you see. So this is the specialty of Lojong. You know, all Lojongs are like that. Is, you know, whether it's right or wrong, motivation or action or dedication, as long as thing to so-called as to offend or abandon other being is non-dharma. It's non-dharma. So, you know, in... Oh yeah, Lojong practitioner. Yeah, I think Lojong practitioner no need puja. I mean, Lojong practitioner no need puja, no need chakra to hang. Lojong practice, because when things go wrong, that is the opportunity for their realization. When things go right, also opportunity. Things go wrong, also opportunity. Things go wrong, they become so happy. Things go right, also they become happy. You see, so for Lojong practitioner, you know, that's why when you hear the stories of the past great practitioners, those great Mahasiddhas are all Lojong practitioners who obtained one lifetime realizations because of this much serious practice. That's why I call Kadamba. You know, Kadamba is there's not even a single factor which cannot bring into a practice of Dharma. For us, it's very biased. When times are good, Dharma practice. When times are not good, we hate Dharma. You know? When times are good, well, blessing guru, this and that. When times are not good, blame the guru, blame the dharma, you know, never really, you know. The Lojong practitioner is always like, blame the delusion, fight with the delusion, rest, because the delusion is the one harms sentient being, you know. So even like, you know, even like chanting mantras, you know, finding a weaker point of other sentient being and try to eliminate them, to pacify them, like such a spirit, also wrong, also non-dharma. That means it's like unbelievable, isn't it? Not unbelievable. It's believable, but it's so good, isn't it? It's like, it's amazing. So then I think enlightenment is possible, you know. Otherwise, like somehow it becomes, even though say compassion, right motivation, is sometimes it's really like kind of bit of excuse. Make us feel better, and you know, make us feel better. But the point is to make sure the harm givers are destroyed. Then you know, like enlightenment. You know, for the make sure right motivation, you know, to make every single living being to enlightenment. Therefore, I want to, you know, in Lojong practice, the moment you mention I, you finish wrong. You see, even for enlightenment, you know, if you express for the purpose of I, it's not pure. It's a wrong motivation. You only for the sake of others. The self have to be totally forget. But that doesn't mean forget about your health, forget about yourself, because you are one of the sentient being. But you cannot like say, I am sentient being, you know. You just say sentient being. You just say all other living beings. You know, all other living beings. The best is so-called sentient being, because we say all other living being, you know, the conventional word kind of like differentiate, you are like you put aside. Again, you know, to become a Buddha, you left out one sentient being, also obstruction. So best way to use is all sentient being, so you are included. At the same time, we are secure of not becoming an improper motivation. So that's why I think that now pujas, chanting, so when you start to, you know, start to think more on Lojong, it's almost like a bit frustrating, you know. Like you know, ask puja, you know, again you're asking puja. For what? And that kind of, like, you know, it becomes like that, you are too into, you know. So I guess maybe like to live in like, you know, our society like this, I think you shouldn't be too much Lojong. You should be a bit flexible. So that's just joking. No, that day, remember, the text it says, if you are Lojong practitioner today, and you already committed whatever prayer and practices in the past, because you found Lojong practice today, and you forget all the past practices wrong, but you find Lojong practice today freshly, you don't have any other commitment, you don't need any other thing. So you already have, you don't abandon, but not necessary new things, just stick on the practice, Lojong practice. So it's clear? Yeah. Is that there? We can interpret that way. But then what means by life distracting? It means killing them or cause or create a kind of like a to cause for killing, or it means is killing. Threaten life. So what is the border? What is the border of threatening a life? maybe like weakening their spirit is also threatening their life or not? Then that also cannot do, isn't it? Because when you also cannot. No, because that's why it's like you know, the question that we went through, choose the supreme, what just now, the question that just now went through, choose the supreme, you know, there's one question you ask supreme, like, you know, there's a principle. Bending principle to in order to make other happy. The question exactly that you ask is, we should choose principle or that the other. That's one another question which is related to this one. My answer is choose principle, that one. No, because just now we went through the question answer. Can you help to say the question and also my answer? Oh, I see. How to say? Okay, meantime. Yeah, because Lojong practice is the practice which contained entire aspect of Dharma. You know, entire aspect of Dharma. Yes. Everything inside here. Because it talks about the true awakening mind is the essence of the Lojong teaching, which is the emptiness and bodhicitta. So that is. No. You can do puja to help someone else, but not to offend, or not to harm, or not to kind of like lower their not to weaken them, not to weaken the other being. I agree, do puja, yes, should do puja, no problem. But what I'm saying, I try to find, because try to be so careful based on this teaching. We try to make like very clear, you know. So just now the teaching is sounds like you never pray for yourself, you only pray for other. You never practice Dharma for yourself, you practice Dharma for reason for other. If you make dedication, if you want to make a light offering, if you just mention your name, it doesn't become Lojong practice. Rather mention every other sentient being's name or somebody else's name, then only become proper Dharma, proper light offering. Yeah, it's bodhicitta, yeah. So that's why, you know, it's telling us to practice the real bodhicitta. Otherwise, like, called bodhicitta, but many ways there's a danger of becoming excuse, actually, to bring only benefit to ourselves. We only say it's beneficial for others, but in fact, it's always striving benefit for oneself. So anyway, what I mean is, based on the earlier question, Strive the principle. You know, the Bodhisattva, who has the clairvoyance to see the 500 businessmen traveling across the ocean, and the what you call the seller, you know, has an intention to kill all the 500 businessmen. You know, or to kill all the 500 businessmen. So, but no one aware of it. So the Bodhisattva through clairvoyance saw that. So since the Bodhisattva through clairvoyance saw that, so he also traveled on the boat and he saved 500 lives and he killed one sailor. Because of killing one sailor, saved the 500 lives. But that doesn't mean Bodhisattva never committed negative karma. This Bodhisattva committed negative karma of killing one person, but this Bodhisattva committed virtue of saving 500 lives. You know, with 500 lives. So here he chose the principle. You know, you couldn't find. Never mind. It's okay. Karma. So you see. Then also another story is. Okay, the earlier story, Bodhisattva accumulated negative karma and he have to experience the consequences. If he don't purify, have to experience the consequences. But he also experienced the great amount of good consequences of saving 500 beings' life. At the same time, save the negative karma of killing 500 beings for the sailor. Otherwise, the sailor will commit the karma of killing 500 beings. Like that. Then there's one monk, fully ordained monk, and a deer and the hunter. The hunter was chasing after the deer, and the monk was standing at the T junction. And the T junction have a certain time, there's a block, you know, there's no way to go further. So the hunter chased the deer, and the deer went to the west direction, you know. And then the hunter came and asked the monk where the deer went, which direction did it went, only two directions. So he analyzed. If he tell the truth, he know it's a definite that going to cause life of the deer. But if he show the wrong direction, he create the karma of life. So he choose the principle, or there is a word, you know, actually just now, the word, very nice one there, the word, you know, but anyway, you choose the advantage, the disadvantage and advantage, that you have to choose the advantage, even though there's a disadvantage, but always have to choose the, even though there might be a disadvantage, but always have to choose the advantage aspect. So the advantage aspect is, to save the life of the deer is greater merit than sacrificing experiencing of the karma of lying. Because the karma of lying is compared to participating to kill one sentient being's life is much more heavier. Because if he show the right direction, he also participate for killing. You know, but if he lie means he only lie but save somebody's life. You know, save one sentient being's life. So he have to experience of karma of lying. But at the same time, he saved the negative karma for the hunter to experience negative experience of killing the deer. At the same time, the monk created the karma of saving someone's life. So in our life, many things are like that. In our life, you know, two things come together, you know. Always like don't know which one to do, so you have to check disadvantage and advantage. If you see more advantage, choose the advantage, and we have to sacrifice the disadvantage part. But that doesn't mean you don't have to commit any negative karma. That doesn't mean you will not commit any virtue. Okay. Now the mantra here. So, I think you have to interpret a little bit. So, what's that? So here it's referring, without bodhicitta, if you chant a mantra to subdue spirits and evils, evil beings, a spirit or harm, non-human harm givers, is a negative karma creation, wrong, and shouldn't do. But with bodhicitta, with bodhicitta, then you chant the mantra, then it is all right to do. So I have to interpret that way. So that means without bodhicitta, and it is true, without bodhicitta, by reciting powerful mantras, most of the practitioners are born as a very powerful spirits, because the mantra is, you know, somehow got a power. Then lack of bodhicitta, you cannot, you know, subdue delusion, and that somehow when die throw into a spirit. It's similar to preta, but it become a wonder spirit. That's why some spirit can be very powerful, you know, like that. You know, so without bodhicitta, even reciting mantra can be dangerous. Without bodhicitta, if reciting mantra, you are accumulating some kind of level of power. Yes, you get some kind of like the mental power become quite strong, you know. But the consequences, there's a danger of throwing oneself into a at the time of dying, overwhelmed with anger. Mostly the powerful mantra is not much about attachment. The powerful mantra might bring the consequences, without bodhicitta, might bring the consequences of anger, frustration. So these are even like tantric practitioners, if you don't have a bodhicitta practice, if you don't practice bodhicitta seriously and do a lot of sadhana and do a lot of mantra practices, you know, there's a danger of like you become more and more impatient, you become more and more like angry person. There's a danger, because the mantra itself got power, but because lack of bodhicitta, it enhances the different system, and that makes you the nerve system become very 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 sensitive, and that brings about frustration, and that brings about the effect goes to the heart chakra, and that heart chakra activation without bodhicitta, it turns anger. You become very angry person, very frustrated person. So like that. So mantra is definitely very powerful, but must conjoin bodhicitta. You know. So that's the advice here. In the case of human, you should avoid unearthing. For instance, the moral lapses in a situation where many people are around, like the criticism. You kind of bring them down, pull their leg, you know, that kind of. I think they just are saying the pull leg, not necessarily pull real leg, but it's like criticizing the weakness of the people, especially where there's people, you know, many people around, you know. So then for that, even with the bodhicitta intention, not supposed to do. Here we have to say, even with the bodhicitta intention, that you cannot their moral lapses in the situation where many people, even with the bodhicitta motivation. Yeah. So we will stop here. Then we do question and answer a little bit. Okay, thank you. Yes. Okay, so there's something is related to this, you know, I think nice to share. Hisong Dalai Lama, you know, used to mention the safest mantra to recite is Om Mani Padme Hum, Chenrezig's this mantra. You know, safest mantra, whether you have bodhicitta or don't bodhicitta, whatever, safest mantra, most effective mantra, really will bring accumulation of merit and purification of karma to recite Om Mani Padme Hum. Recite Chenrezig's mantra, the compassionate Buddha's mantra. Whenever you recite compassionate Buddha's mantra, it never, you know, trigger into your mind is for your own sake. It's something to do with other's purpose, beneficial purpose, because it's compassionate Buddha, you know, purpose. Let's say Manjushri. They say, oh, I want to recite Manjushri mantra. Immediately the self-cherishing comes to enhance my wisdom, my, I, you know. Oh, I want to recite Vajrasattva mantra. Immediately, oh, I need to purify my negative karma. The I comes. You know. Oh, I want to recite Tara mantra. For what? To enhance the speedy in maybe your goodness, well-being, or my dharma practice. I comes. You know. So that's such and such. So you say, when you recite Chenrezig mantra, it's like compassionate Buddha. It's a naturally it reflects to the other beings. It somehow is naturally kind of it doesn't kind of relate to the self-grasping mind. So that's what Isan Dalama says, that if any powerful mantra that you wish to recite for any purpose, recite Chenrezig mantra. It's everything there. You don't need to go for this and that and also the mantras. That, I mean, this is normally his son is very diplomatic. You call it diplomatic. It's a nice word, one, you know, diplomatic. It's a nice word. Diplomatic. You know, he's like very like that. So that's what he used to say. But I want to make clear, I'm not saying that you shouldn't recite Manjushri mantra bad. I'm not saying that if you do for the pure Dharma practice, then you have to, based on Lojong teaching, that you when you recite for the benefit of other, then it's of course. But if you recite something for the benefit of the ego, your own self, then of course it doesn't bring a great benefit. That's the reason. What do you want to say? Say. Not necessary. Yeah, you can say that, because the like sort of high sacred tantric deities, you know, because the power is so powerful, you know, there's so much power. So if you practice the right way, you know, it really, you know, bring the benefit of enlightenment so fast. But if you miss the fundamental practice, even though you call as you're practicing Yamataka, but you're in fact practicing something else. And Yamataka is not the one that by practicing his mantra throw us to the wrong place. It is not like, because we practice wrong thing, that's why we throw in the wrong thing. But we only say that we are practicing Yamataka, but in fact we are not. No, so because of that reason. Similar, yeah. Self-cherishing, Jinjin, is more, is kind of like a, the cherishing, the grasping is towards I, but it covers including the aggregates, like a person, is it like, you know, like the I, like the ego. Not only that, but it's like also coverage the entire formation aspect of a person, the cherishing is the object of cherishing is I, but entire aspect of the person. The grasping is the egoistic I. It just pinpoint directly to the I. It's not necessary that the whole formation of a person. So, like Qinzin, qi is more elaborate, and Dangzin is like dark eye, like that. So there's little, you know, there's almost quite similar, but it's little, is there some difference there? Selflessness. No, it's more gross. Self-cherishing more subtle. Oh, the subtle self-grasping, in fact, is referred to the self-cherishing. Oh no, not okay. Don't say okay. Yeah, let me say that. So then. Oh, 10-level Bodhisattva. You mean 10-level Bodhisattva, the subtle of self-grasping referring to the ignorant. The name of for that actually is referring to the ignorant. But we label as a subtle self-grasping, but actually is the ignorant, referring to the ignorant. Because the grasping, entire aspect of grasping, the self-grasping attitude already by when you reach the eighth ground, we already purified. Anyway, but they still can be debate. Can discuss more. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Lord, I
chan jo semen jo rinpo che mai je ba na mai je jo lo che che ba nya ba me ba ya ko ne go do de wa ra
shu thank you